You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue, and once again from beautiful Sunrise, Florida, although probably the Tampa area now, is Scott McLaughlin.
Also
it
not
hasn't
beautiful.
Been beautiful.
Yeah, I got blessed with clouds and rain my last 48 hours in Florida.
We thought he was going to come back with a sunburn, but it's not happening. It's not. Because I saw the pictures from the Bruins, like, showing up to the rink yesterday, and it looked like a torrential downpour, and I'm like, Scott's
yeah,
not.
Yesterday was crazy. So, like, I got back here to the Tampa area, like, mid-afternoon, spent some time at my grandfather's, and then drove into the game, and I know, you know, Boston doesn't do well with rain traffic-wise either, but Tampa traffic, when it's downpouring, it was like people are barely moving. It was bad. It's normally a half hour from my grandfather's into Tampa, and it took me like an hour 20.
Yeah, unfortunately, Scott, it's you're there when the weather for some reason is shit, because it's not like if it's a summertime, you expect the rain in Florida, the showers, but Florida is supposed to be like really nice from January or actually the fall through like April, May.
My time in Sunrise was nice. And I, between a morning skate and the game on Tuesday, I got over to Fort Lauderdale. So at least a little beach time, got to see the ocean at least, but yeah, that was nice. It was just getting back to Tampa. It's been crap here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I lived in North Carolina, it was beautiful starting like the first week of February on until, mm-hmm. and then I would come back home for usually the end of April and then be freezing and not happy that I left. But that stinks. You didn't get the right weather, Scott. We don't feel all that bad for you because it's also raining here and colder. So
we expect that here. We expect that here, you know. Yeah. Unfortunately, he was going down there for the sun and, you know, in any event. So quick Florida trip for the Bruins. They got the Panthers, then they had Tampa Bay on a back-to-back. Obviously not to bury the lead. They go 1-1 in that two-game sample size. So lots to get to. Let's throw it right to you guys for the opening shifts.
Sure, I'll go first. I thought, you know, we're going to definitely get into the Florida game more. I thought that was the more interesting of these two games, quite frankly. But there was an interesting development on Wednesday, and that was that Jim Montgomery elected to split up the Hampus Lindholm-Brandon Carlo pairing. He put Lindholm with Andrew Peak, Carlo with Parker Weatherspoon. And before the game, he explained it as basically just experimenting. He said he just wanted to see who might have chemistry with each other, try some different things. I think that was the friendly explanation, because I also think part of it is that the Lindholm-Carlo pairing had been struggling recently. In the four games prior to Tampa, they had been on the ice for 5 goals against and 0-4, which is just not what you expect from that pairing. So maybe, you know, kind of give them a game apart, possibly hope they find their game individually, or, you know, I think we all expect him to put Lindholm and Carlo back together, probably as early as Saturday, but tried to shake things up. I thought the results weren't great. Both of those new pairings were on the ice for a goal against. I thought Lindholm and Peak at least had some offensive zone time, you know, pretty good analytics, possession numbers, all that. Carlo Weatherspoon pairing, I thought, really struggled. They were also out there for what would have been a second goal against had it not been called back for offsides. You know, and that's kind of interesting because Weatherspoon and Carlo have played together a little bit early in the season, not much, but you know, that wasn't a totally new pairing and they just really struggled. I also found it interesting that when Montgomery decided to split up Lindholm and Carlo, it was mixing them in with third pairing guys and not loading up Lindholm and McAvoy together, which probably would have been the way I would have gone, you know, give that. If you're going to give anything a little bit of a look before the playoffs, give that a look and kind of know what you have there if you decide maybe you want to, you know, load up that top pairing at some point. But, yeah, so just found that interesting. So that's my opening shift.
Yeah, and mine has to do with someone else that was on the ice for, I know, at least one goal, the very first goal by Chafee in the Tampa Bay game. James Van Riemsdyk just lost Chafee in coverage. And my opening shift is just what's going on with him, right? We talked about it in our mailbag. We got a lot of mailbag questions about him. Is it still illness? What is it? Well, either way, he hasn't been playing very fast. He hasn't been where he needs to be on the ice. And then he immediately takes a penalty after the goal against to start the Tampa game. And it was a really rough start to that game for him. He didn't even play in the Florida game. He was a scratch again. And then he comes in, does not play well, in my opinion, in the Tampa game. And it kind of just leaves that question out on the table that we were getting in the mailbag and throughout, you know, this stretch where he has been sick and not playing well. Just what's going on with him? And is this a sign of fatigue? Is it illness? Is it just a slump? Is it like, what's going on with him? It remains to be seen, really. We can only find out through a larger sample size whether or not it's coming out of this illness that's the reason or what. And also the main question we were getting about him is, should he be healthy scratched for the playoffs? So we'll get more into that as well, because Lauko definitely has more energy right now. I think you could say the skill set's not what JVR brings, and Lauko's not going to be playing on the first power play unit or anything like that, which is what JVR brings when he's playing at the top of the game. But right now, first and foremost, the energy level isn't there, and you need a higher energy level from everyone in the playoffs.
It's a really good point, Bridget. He needs to do better when he gets his opportunities. Obviously, he's been sick, he's been hurt. It's kind of the perfect storm. But at the end of the day, if the playoffs come around and he's not a net positive player for you, there's also a guy named Patrick Maroon who hasn't gotten a sniff yet because of injury, and he's kind of penciled in on the fourth line. And I think we kind of saw the last couple of games why he could bring some value in the playoffs. But if he's in a fourth line role, Justin Brazeau has not been playing like a fourth liner. So, you know, I could see a scenario where JVR potentially loses a top nine role to Brazeau if Maroon is on the fourth line or something like that, even before Lauko gets in. But definitely more meat on that bone and more to discuss. So the game against Tampa Bay, it's the second of a back-to-back. Tampa's fresh. It's a tough situation for the Bruins to be in, especially with how demanding the game was against Florida. Now, do I feel bad? No, that's going to be what the playoffs are going to entail, is grueling games with an unfavorable schedule at times. So tough luck, get used to it. But I wanted to focus on that Florida game because I do think that it was one of their better showings of the year. It comes on the heels of public embarrassment and ridicule from Jim Montgomery getting skated in their last practice due to not being ready to practice on time after some not so great games. And on top of that, you give up a goal in the first minute of the game against Florida, and it's like, man, things could have gone south. And I don't love the fact they give up that goal that early, especially that McAvoy-Grizzly pairing. It rubbed me the wrong way, though they made up for it later in the game. But in any event, they get down early, and literally and figuratively all night, they just fought back until they ended up getting a 4-3 win in regulation. And you had different guys stepping up, going outside their comfort zone. Lindholm getting in his first career fight, if you want to call it that. Marchand punching up in a fight. And then you had your top guys.
And they called that roughing.
Yeah.
Like the one that was a fight, they called roughing. And the one that was roughing, they called a fight. It was... Lindholm did not want to fight. I'm just going to say his gloves stayed on the whole time.
He did kind of stand up for himself, though. I think, he did throw that first punch.
With the gloves on.
Sure.
He's roughing, not a fight. So.
But something you wouldn't really see him do in general. But he kind of got pushed, and obviously he's going to get tuned up by Sam Bennett if they would actually drop the gloves. But you kind of, look, you respect what he's doing there. And then the Bruins stars were their stars when it mattered most, and it was just a really good, really good effort. And so that's my opening shift.
Yeah, it was funny seeing like reaction from fans online, whether Twitter, Facebook, wherever, Instagram. After Tuesday's win over the Panthers, it's, whoa, holy crap, what a win, best win of the year. And I'm totally in agreement. Like, to me, it was the best win of the season. Then they lose to Tampa, and it's, they stink. They are unmotivated. Blah, like all the same stuff. And it's like, guys, come, like, we can't yo-yo like this 24 hours apart. There's, you know, I can't get worked up over the loss to the Lightning. Like, it's one of, if I were commissioner of all sports.
Of all sports?
Yeah.
Wow, the power NHL, that you want.
NHL and NBA in particular, no back-to-backs ever. It wouldn't happen because you just get junk that second night 90% of the time in both sports. We only care about hockey, so I'll stick to that. But like, this is what happened. Like, it's not, especially after such a physical, emotional game like Florida. I'm sorry, if you were expecting them to give that same effort again the second night, I just don't think you have realistic expectations of like what a human body's capable of. Like, I don't want to make too many excuses for them, but It's a brutal schedule. Like, that, it wasn't gonna happen.
First, there's so much there, Scott, because now I know you want to be the commissioner of all sports, but also like the emotional roller coaster you have to be on to get so hyped for the win against Florida and then be so down against Tampa. Like, it's obviously what you'd call it on the schedule is a scheduled loss, because you're playing a really tough opponent when what you really expected to be an emotional game because of the circumstances of the playoffs last year and just how Florida plays. And to be able to come back and do that back-to-back nights was never really realistic, I guess. So it's not surprising they lose, but and it wasn't their best game, obviously. But if we want to just focus on the Florida game, because that was Brian's opening shift, it was – the first 8 minutes I was concerned we were going to have the same issue as the last two games with and the practice that Montgomery ended up having the guys do sprints for, because the energy wasn't there. They give up the early goal. First 8 minutes or so were just not good. And then they get a power play. They start building, and all of a sudden they're leading in shots, and you see the confidence coming back, and things are starting to get physical. And so they did pick themselves up after getting punched really early with that goal against. And the my question is, though, for you guys, we saw once again on this road trip, we saw Swayman win against Florida. And then we saw Ullmark come and play really well and lose against Tampa Bay. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on what we saw from goaltending.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I thought both goaltenders were strong in each of their respective games. There was one play in Tampa Bay where Ullmark went out and played the puck, and I was like, I'm getting flashbacks to game five, buddy. Can you learn your lesson and just stay in the net? But besides that, the goaltending was a non-issue for me in either game, which is good.
Yeah, I thought both played well. I had said going in that I would have liked to have seen Ullmark get the Florida game, which would have been a second straight start, just because I feel like Swayman's been getting the quote-unquote bigger games for a while now, and I thought Ullmark had been outplaying him. I would have liked to have seen Ullmark get the marquee game. Not that Tampa Bay's not. Like, obviously, that's a big game, too, and probably in some ways might have ended up, could have ended up being a tougher game, given that it was the back-to-back, and you're probably not expecting the best effort from the team in front of you. But I didn't think you really saw Tampa's best effort either. Jim Montgomery said that afterwards, you know, like, I didn't feel like they were peppering Ullmark all night or anything like that. Like, he had to make some good saves for sure, but you know, they were coming. Tampa had been one of the hotter teams in the NHL, like, still is, but they're coming off a long West Coast trip, so even though they'd been off since Sunday, you know, you always get that cliche about first game back after a long road trip, and I thought you kind of saw that a little bit from them too. They had more in the tank than the Bruins did, clearly. They had better legs in the third period. I thought that was really when you saw it catch up to the Bruins, is, you know, they're down by a goal. You have a chance to push to tie it, and they just couldn't do it. I mean, they didn't have a single shot in goal in the last 7 minutes of the game. You know, they pull their goalie, and once again, that, you know, 6-on-5 situations remain a struggle for them, really both ways. But they got nothing going with the extra attacker. You know, Kucherov cherry picks and ends up with an empty net goal to seal it. So I thought that was really where you saw the Bruins. Like, they had hung in there most of the night. Tampa kind of let them hang around, but then they just didn't have enough to make that last push.
Yeah, and I'll extend that not from just the 6-on-5, but just with a man up. Like, that top unit on the power play didn't look great either. So, like, and Pasta talked about it after the game. He said, you know, the power play hasn't been good. 6-on-5, we need to do much better than that. He said we didn't have many looks. 6-on-5, definitely something we have to practice. Be more patient, need to be confident entering the zone with speed on the 6-on-5 and on the power play. So you see similarities between how they were struggling to generate 6-on-5, and Pasta also mentioned that usually we're on the other side of a 6-on-5. Usually we're leading and defending a 6-on-5, which I think you could probably argue hasn't gone well for them either at different points this season. Gives you just another reason to practice it, right? Like, you have one unit that's the 6 and they're learning, and one unit that's the 5, and they're, you know, double whammy, work on that, because that is a situation in the playoffs that is very important. Because we saw what happened in game 7. But so I think if you guys want to take it from there, like, power play, top power play unit, and 6-on-5, what were your thoughts?
I thought they had looks. Well, as it pertains to the power play in Florida, I thought they had looks. And obviously, Frederick's goal was a power play goal, technically. Was that the only power play goal they had all two games? Was that one?
I believe so. I'm just double checking real quick, but I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they had looks against Florida. But 6-on-5, it's just, yeah, I mean, there was a lot to be desired there, right? I mean, you know, first of all, it starts with the faceoff loss. I think the Bruins lost the faceoff. And that's not great. That's, you talk about Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle and how they've stepped up this year and really have mitigated the loss of Bergeron and Krejci. Well, the faceoff circle is when it matters most. Those two in particular are going to have to really bear down. And faceoffs are a five-man job, right? Oftentimes, there's a misconception. It's just the center versus center. But there's a lot of 50-50 battles in there that the wingers have to come in and help out on. But that's an area going forward where you have a big moment face off. Can Coyle and Zaka, can they bear down on the other, you know, top center in that situation? And 6-on-5 as it carried on, McAvoy barely gains the red line, gets it deep, and next thing you know, it's out. So I don't really know. It's hard to say. I loved it. It was kind of a one and done. They didn't really set much up with it.
Also, it worked, but bold strategy by Tampa to basically defend it like as a 6-on-4. I mean, Kucherov's not even close to being in the zone. Like, you know, if the Bruins make a couple quick passes there and score and Kucherov's hanging out at center ice, you're like, what the hell kind of strategy was that, guys? Credit to them for working, but you know, little risk there too. I have a barking dog once again. I thought the power play took a step forward on Tuesday. Like, I thought that top unit got good looks, and then you end up the goal with kind of a hybrid unit as a couple guys had changed off and Frederick comes on. It definitely didn't look good Wednesday, but again, I don't really think any part of the Bruins game looked all that good Wednesday. So, you know, it's disappointing though, because like that is a game where, not that they had a ton of power play opportunities, I think they had two, but you know, you might need your top guys to break through when you're not generating much in other ways, or especially 5-on-5.
Yeah. And you want to see somebody like Brad Marchand just get a little bit more of, generate a little bit better chances on the power play, just because of where he is and just trying to get his numbers and everything back up for him.
Yeah. Sorry, Scott, go ahead.
I was going to say, I will say, I think I've liked that top unit a little more with Marchand net front and Zaka over on the elbow. In some ways, I think it's actually forced them to like have more movement, because Marchand's not just going to stay net front stationary. Like, he moves around. I think that forces other guys to move around and it gives them different looks. So I've actually kind of liked that. I don't know if it lasts, but at least they haven't been as stationary as they were when it was like, okay, here's everyone's defined spots. McAvoy up top, Pastrnak left elbow, Marchand right elbow, bumper, net front. And it's like, everyone just stays there. And it's like, all right, most good penalty kills are going to be able to figure out how to defend that. So at least now there's some movement.